Welcome back to Construction Tech Talk, where we bridge the traditions of the trades with the innovations of the future. Today, we're venturing into an inspiring story of innovation, entrepreneurship, and transformative technology within the construction industry. In this episode, we're thrilled to have Eric Fortenberry, a visionary entrepreneur who's not only been named to the Inc. 30 Under 30 list, but has also received recognition at the White House and United Nations for his innovative contributions. Eric's journey from the high-stakes world of investment banking to pioneering change in the construction sector is nothing short of remarkable. As the founder and CEO of JobTread, he has developed groundbreaking construction estimating and project management software that has revolutionized how construction companies operate, grow, and manage their projects. Under Eric's leadership, JobTread has not only helped thousands of construction companies streamline their processes and scale their operations, but has also earned accolades as the number one construction management software and construction estimating software. His passion for solving complex problems and a track record of successful ventures bring a wealth of knowledge, experience, and insights to our conversation today. Join us as we delve into Eric's entrepreneurial journey, the story behind JobTread, and how this innovative platform is shaping the future of construction management. Stay tuned as we uncover the challenges, victories, and lessons learned along the way, offering valuable insights for anyone looking to leverage technology to elevate their construction business.
So, Eric, man, I really appreciate you joining us on the show today. Special pleasure to have the CEO of JobThread here. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
So you're coming in with some big honors. I was doing some research beforehand, and I saw that you had recognition on Inc. 30 Under 30, right? You were honored at the White House and the United Nations. I got to hear a little about that. So can you kind of share the journey, the innovations, and some of the big decisions that you made to get you to this point with JobThread?
So it sounds like you want to go way back, huh?
Way back, man. I got to hear your story. I'm all about storytelling.
Yeah. Went to University of Texas at Austin for my undergrad. When I graduated there and ended up going to work at a boutique investment bank, I was at the bank for all of 9 months before I quit to start up my first software company.
That was You lasted long, hey? Nine months. World.
Some of the best advice I got in business school, it was an entrepreneurial professor said, his advice was essentially get in and get out of investment banking as fast as you can. It's a 30-minute meeting with the CEO, like you'll learn more in that than you're going to learn in all sorts of other courses that you could take or all different work experiences you could have, like just get in and get out. And so I was on this one deal. These two kids out of Vanderbilt had started up an online software company out of their grandmother's basement. They bootstrapped this ed tech company. The original concept is like online flashcards for students preparing to get into college. Every state had its own state standards. And long story short, though, these two guys bootstrapped it out of their grandmother's basement, $3,000 each. 5 years later, they came to our bank and they're doing, I don't know, something like $14 million revenue, $8 million in profitability, just like wildly successful. This is the very first deal I'm ever on, right? So I write the whole book, to draft up the book to sell the company, built the whole financial model. My boss has actually sent me over to their office where I scanned every single contract they had ever signed into an online data room. And I basically just fell in love with the whole software as a service model. We ended up selling their company for $112 million. I'm just sitting there passing these two guys these huge checks, just thinking, man, like I am on the wrong side of this table. And it was along that same time frame. I was dating this girl. She was a senior at UT. She actually ended up breaking up with me. She's like, all you care about is working and making money. You should go call my ex-boyfriend. That's all he cared about. So I called him.
No, you did not.
Yeah,
you called the dude. I love that.
He turned out to be the original developer of this. He built this thing for his National Honor Society, this online group management networking site. This is like at the same exact time as when Facebook got started. And I had just graduated college. I ran a student organization when I was in college. I was like, man, like this would have really benefited us to have a tool like this to manage my student organization. And we ended up partnering up and essentially he just rebuilt the whole thing and geared it towards college student organizations. And I was working on this on the side and you got to the point where I was like, man, like this is a legit product that I could go sell. I was like, what's it going to take for me to be a 50-50 partner with you? Like, I'll quit my job right now and we'll make this a household name in every university. And You know, it's like, well, I've spent about $1,000 over the last couple of years. If you want to split that, you can have half the company.
500.
So as fast as I could whip out my checkbook, I literally wrote him a $500 check, bought half the company, and quit my job at the bank. We bootstrapped this software company out of a 5-bedroom house in Austin. Now, he had already signed a job offer at Microsoft. I ended up going to Microsoft and literally just gave back his half the company and a 1-page cheat sheet on what I could do at the database and things like that. And so I had to go find a couple computer science students, you know, recruited them to come on and take over the development. And we built this first company out of this 5-bedroom house in Austin. Actually ended up getting a second house right around the corner. Both of us bootstrapped it out of both of these houses. So anyways, ended up moving that company back to Dallas at some point. We started off selling to student organizations, but then the departments of student life found out what we're doing. And they're like, hey, we want to oversee and manage these groups. I was like, all right, cool. So we'll create this umbrella portal so that you could do that. And then a bunch of the other departments around campus wanted that same thing. So we had to create an umbrella over all those. And so we started selling it to the Division of Student Affairs and ultimately walked all the way up to IT. Long story short here, we took this to about 650 universities in 13 countries, had over 20 million users on our site when we ended up selling the company in 2015. I learned the hard way why not to sell your company to a private equity firm. As much as it was very successful for me and mm-hmm. my family and kind of our family and friend investors, it was a sad ending to what was an awesome company that we built over 9 or 10 years. And they ended up coming in and basically jacking up the price on the customers. They the first thing they bought after us is our biggest competitor. And so they wanted to migrate us up under them and ultimately shut down our product, put it on the shelf, moved all the customers over. And then they essentially, 1 year and 1 day, came in, they fired me and my dad, who is our CFO, and just proceeded to gut the rest of the company after that. So a bittersweet ending, if you will.
But
again, got a really great experience building and having a successful exit. It was after that, though, a buddy of mine was, actually even before that. So I'm sitting there doing a bunch of home renovation projects, trying to figure out what to do with my life, getting bored as could be.
Identity a little bit, right?
Yeah. It's funny, man. You go just like, as an entrepreneur, just on the grind constantly to, like, okay, what do I do every day? So I'm like, what do you want? I'm asking my wife, what do you want? So yeah, I want a new bathroom. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's go figure out how to remodel the bathroom. Or you want some electrical, you want some plumbing, like all sorts of home automation projects. But I ended up like started hanging out with my landscaper, just drinking in the front yard. Like I'm like, again, just bored as could be. And I realized that like she had an awesome like design ability and she did full outdoor living, things like that. But like when I went and started spending time at her office, I'm just trying to figure out how could she better run her business. And I found that just because she was great at her trade, like it wasn't enough for her to build a successful business. Mm-hmm. And so I thought she wasn't invoicing me because she like appreciated all of her time and I was helping out. Turned out she was just so unorganized and had no idea who was getting invoiced and who wasn't. And so I helped her implement a software and ultimately got that software tied into her QuickBooks. Just got them on track. I saw the impact of implementing systems and processes and how it really helped her. I had some frustrations with that software, but that's a whole separate story. Got her on track. And it was a couple months after that, my buddy was running a construction company, asked me to come over and help him figure out how to scale his business. He was about 4 or 5 years in, had about 10 employees. They were almost around 5 million in sales, decent sized business, but like they just, they couldn't break through that glass ceiling. Like they were just stuck right there. And I walk in, it felt like deja vu all over again, like just papers, binders, like lack of processes, like very chaotic situation, as I'm sure a lot of people in construction can relate to.
Amen.
Yeah. Paper timesheets walking in, they're printing off all their bills, putting them into binders and waiting for the project manager to come in and approve them whenever that would be. And then someone is manually typing into this spreadsheet and then typing it over here and then copying it into QuickBooks. Like, we're just like, guys, like you clearly just need some software. I told him how I just implemented software with this other business and how I thought it was going to help him. And that's when I went, did a deep dive into all the construction software out there. I tried it all, looked at it all, made this big spreadsheet, all the features, all the pros, the cons, the costs, what it was going to take to implement. But at the end of that, like I struggled to make a recommendation for him because I was just like, man, like this is like such a huge industry. with what felt like very like antiquated, cumbersome looking software. And I ended up just saying, guys, I'm not exactly sure what we should implement here. Like, it either looks super expensive, looked like it was going to take a bunch of time to implement, or we're going to have to hire someone or customize it. And so they were like, well, you're a software guy. Can't you just build us something? I was like, whoa, hold on, hold on. You guys definitely don't need you're not qualified to maintain this thing. I'm not trying to take on a full-time position here. I was just here to help as a consultant. And they kept pushing me, though. So finally, I was like, man, I'm feeling really bored. Maybe this is a great opportunity. Like, all right, let's see what we can make happen. I told them I had three conditions. One, I take over. So I have the full ability to hire, to fire, to whatever processes, systems, whatever needs to be done to right the ship. I had that ability. Two, I told them I'd give them 1 year of my time. I'm all in. I'm going to show up every day. Like, we're going to build this out and solve this problem. And three, everything I build, though, is my intellectual property. So if this thing has potential to become my next software company, that I'm leaving that door open for myself. And they agreed, made me a partner. You know, I took over the business as CEO. And so we started building out what is now JobTread. And I started at the estimate and started at the very beginning, just helping them figure out, like, how come we can't hit our target profit margins? How come it's just like, it was a total crapshoot. I told them, you guys might as well go to Vegas and roll the dice. There's no telling how you're going to perform on this job. And
they're guessing, they're making assumptions.
Yeah, exactly. And back of the envelope type deals, just making up numbers. So that's where we started. We built out this budget building feature within JobTread as the core, as the foundation that allowed
them
to.
Which is fantastic, by the way. Not to cut you off, but it's fantastic. Yeah, it's the core of everything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, guys, like, no more making up numbers. Figure out what are the costs that are going to go into this project. What is the labor looking like? What materials are we going to need? Like, are we going to need permits, equipment? Like, whatever the costs are, put those in and focus on writing out a detailed scope of work, and we'll take care of automatically calculating the price based on our target profit margin. Mm-hmm. The problem was, some of the guys were just marking up the costs, and then one guy, the owner, he knew about margin. He was using margin to calculate the price. We were targeting a 30% profit margin. The guy's marking it up 30%. Like, we had no chance in hell at hitting 30%. You're only going to get a 23% profit margin if you're only marking it up 30%.
So do you mind maybe even diving into that real quick too? Because I think a lot of people make that mistake. So when you're talking about markup versus margin, what the difference is there, what they should be focusing on?
Yeah, so like the difference is that with markup, all you're doing is you're just adding to your cost. And so it's a lot easier to calculate. Let's say you got $100 and you want to, you know, mark it up 30%. Well, it's $100 times 1.3 is going to get you $130. But margin is actually taking into account your profit margin. And so when you use margin to calculate your price, what you're doing is you're baking that profit into the price. And so instead of multiplying it, you're going to actually divide by the difference between that. So instead of one, let's see, so instead of 1.3, you're going to actually do 1 minus your 0.3. And so you're going to divide by that. And so your price is actually going to be $143. And so, like, it's including that profit into the price versus just adding some arbitrary, you know, factor to it. And so it's a lot easier, and a lot of people want to do markup because it's easier to calculate. But the reality is, like, nowhere does markup ever show up again. Like, it's not a great, you know, tool where you can benchmark how are you performing on the job. But you want to be able to essentially look at and say, okay, we're targeting a 30% margin on this job. And then as we go, maybe we overrun our budget a little bit. Okay, now we're looking at 28%, or maybe we come in under our cost. Maybe we're now actually looking at 35%. At the end of the day, when you go look at your P&L, your profit and loss in your accounting system, like, you're going to have your revenue, you're going to have your cost of goods sold, and then you're going to have your gross profit margin. And so that's why I think using margin is such a better way to sell your jobs, and then to use it as a benchmark along the way, because you're going to be able to know where you're going to ultimately end up when you use that from the very beginning.
100%. So sorry to cut you off in the middle of the story, but I think that's an important topic that some people are doing that day to day, and they're leaving money on the table, right? They're just not doing it properly. All right. So you were talking about the budget. You're setting up the budget, right? You're building out the software. You're running this contracting company. Continue, my friend.
Yeah. I think that was probably one of the biggest shifts that we made, was telling the guys, like, no more using markup. Don't even worry about calculating price. You focus on building out a detailed scope of work and figuring out what is the cost, and we'll automatically calculate the price. Because before, when we were selling jobs, like, we didn't even have the ability to get change orders because nobody had any clue what was included in the scope of work, mm-hmm. because we didn't write it down. We didn't have the documentation. So having this transition was such a huge, just really a monumental change for us. And it allowed our salespeople to get the document, get it signed, hand it off to the project manager. Now had a good idea of how they came up with this price and what was included in the job. And so now we could start running the job with much more detail right out of the gate. But I would say the other big transition here was, like, moving from just when I first took over, we were running our jobs and paying the guys time and material. So we sold it at a fixed price, but then we paid the guys by the day and had a variable cost. And so again, there's no way to sell a job at a fixed price and then think that you're going to hit that target profit margin every time with a variable cost. And one of the stories I like to share, so I actually started, again, shadowing the project managers, doing ride-alongs, really seeing how they were managing the jobs. And that's when I started to realize that there was an issue. But then I started shadowing some of the crews. Like, I wanted to know, like, how come these guys on this crew is able to, like, perform a lot more consistently? They come in fairly accurately where we expected them. But these other guys were all over the map. And so I show up to the job. I think it's like 8 a.m. And I'm sitting there waiting for, it was like almost like an hour before the crew showed up at 9 a.m. And I'm like, where in the world are they? I thought they were going to be there at 7. So they're, like, basically going to Home Depot. And they're having to go shop for the materials, get it all picked out. And I'm like, okay, I'll own this. That was a lesson to me that we should have had the materials already on the job site, or had them available at the shop for them to pick up, or at least have the order put in so it's a very quick pickup. Fine, I'll take that one, lesson learned. But at around 11:30, the guys realized that they need to go back to Home Depot to get some more materials. And so instead of calling the project manager, instead of calling the office, instead of just sending one person, all three of them get back in their truck and they go back to Home Depot, spend like another 30, 45 minutes there, come back to the job site. Okay, now it's lunchtime. So now we're going to take another hour, sit there, we're eating on the job site. And this whole time, the customer is sitting there watching, wondering what the hell's going on. Like, he's like thinking, like, nothing's getting done.
He's not liking the look of that.
I kid you not. At like 2:30, the guys realize they need to go back to Home Depot again. All three of them go. And, like, customer calls me, he's just irate, like, wondering what the hell, you know, is going on here. Like, nothing's getting done. And so I'm like, no, Mr. Customer, like, I completely understand. Like, I'm going to get on it. We're going to figure it out. All the while, what I realized is that, again, this crew, because we were paying them by the day, they were incentivized to drag this out. Why would anybody want to get the work done when they could literally go sit at Home Depot in the AC and, I don't know, maybe they're inventorying Home Depot or something like that. I have no idea what they're doing, but, like, it was very apparent that we were not aligned in how we were operating and executing these jobs. And so that's when we really had this other big transition to start paying our guys with a guaranteed amount. We'd send out a bid request now to the subs, and they knew we had multiple crews. So we'd usually send it to two or three to keep them competitive. Once we got their price to us, plug it into the budget, add our margin, go sell the job. Awesome. Now we can just one click convert that bid request to a work order, whatever price they gave us. Let's say they gave us $10,000 and it's going to take them 5 days to complete this. Awesome. Whatever it is you need, just tell me that. I send them their work order. They're off to the races. Now, if they get that job done in 3 days, like, sweet, like, you're getting paid the same amount and you get to move on to the next job. But if that job takes you 7 days, you're not getting any more. You already told me what your cost was, and now I'm going to hold you to it. I already baked in that cost to my price for the customer, but it's on them. And the funny thing about it, as soon as we transitioned to this model, not only were we able to more accurately budget our jobs and price them out, but the quality of the work went up and the speed went up. Sure enough, like, they realized that they weren't going to get paid to go back out on site over and over. They had to get it done right the first time. And it was just a huge transition for us, and it really helped us to dial in our profits and start hitting those target profit margins. So I'd say that was like the second big
transition. That was with every subcontractor too. So anybody, anytime you sent out a request, that was the model that you guys used for every project.
Everyone except for, we did do a little bit of like on-demand service. If a pipe bursts and is flooding into a room, nobody wants to sit there and wait for us to work up a proposal. We did have pre-agreed hourly rates where we would go out and do on-demand service. I think in that situation, it does still make sense to pay by the hour. And also, again, if it was the nights, the weekends, if it's a holiday, like we had different rates based on that. But aside from that, for every construction job where we were going in and building things out and had a lot more time to plan, then it was basically, we use guaranteed amounts, and that's how we controlled the cost.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. So that was part two.
Part two. Third part is when I started focusing on the back office. And it's funny because maybe I should have started there. But when I started really digging into QuickBooks and trying to figure out what in the world's going on here, when I looked at the accounts payable side, again, like I it's just total chaos. I find that we're double paying our bills. We're overpaying our guys. We got materials on the wrong jobs. Like, again, total chaos. Like, we have no idea what is going on here. And that's ultimately also what kind of brought us this point of, like, hey, like, we have no chance of hitting our target profit margin if we're not tracking our cost and then making sure that we're accurately paying the guys to complete them. And this is where we implemented a system where every single bill that came in the door, it needed to have that PO or that work order number, or it was just flat out rejected. Like, we had to draw a line in the sand. If any bill comes in that does not have a PO or work order number, like, we're not paying it, rejected, sent back. And so this, again, it allowed us to, whenever a bill came in, our back office could now look up the PO, and if the amounts matched, and assuming we also had a threshold, like assuming it was below that threshold, then we could automatically approve it. It was automatically going to be paid. However, if it was over the threshold or if they didn't match, then those are the ones that were going to go to the project manager for additional review and approval. Because again, like, if things are coming in, if it doesn't match, like, why? We had agreed to pay you X and you invoiced us for Y, that's not going to work. And so this is a huge, like, I like to describe it as, like, it felt like we're like death by a thousand cuts, right? We're bleeding out everywhere. And we have no idea where the bleeding's happening. And so by implementing this system, this allowed us to start finding those holes and start plugging them. And again, like, there are just so many of them all over the place that this helped us to really rein in our cost and make sure that we were managing it, but not doing it in a way that was going to just be so overburdensome to the back office. It allowed us to really implement that system to better manage it. Now, on the accounts receivable side, this is probably the craziest thing of this whole story. Is I walk in, we have over $800,000 of accounts receivable. Like, almost $1 million of hard-earned money is just sitting there on the books that we're not focused on. And I'm like, what the hell is going on, guys? And, like, to make matters worse,
was it aging?
Instead of focusing on collecting it, they literally were collateralizing the AR. They were taking the AR to the banks, and they're borrowing $200,000 lines of credit one after another to fuel the business. And, like, my mind almost exploded at this point. Like, I'm like, this is, like, the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen in my life. Are you kidding me? We have already earned this money, and we're not focused on collecting it. And so, how does this happen? Field guys tell the office, hey, send that invoice. And she did it fairly promptly. But the problem was, she was so overwhelmed with everything going on, lack of systems and processes. Like, she just didn't have the time to focus on collections. And she just assumed that the field guys were going to follow up with it. Well, they had no visibility into QuickBooks. They had no idea what was paid and not paid. They're both sitting here pointing the finger at each other. And at the end of the day, we're not collecting anything. You know, I mean, who's eager to pay their bills? Like, you got to follow up with your AR. Like, it is one of the most important things any business owner can do. And so this is where I was like, all right, we need to integrate our new system with QuickBooks. We need to have the visibility into what is our open AR, where are our open invoices, so that the field guys can see that and they can just stay on top of it and help provide that support to make sure that we're getting paid. Otherwise, we need to stop work. If we're not getting, if the invoices aren't getting paid, what are we doing? So I think that was really the third transition, was really getting the back office organized, connected, and on the same page with the field, making sure that we're focusing on collecting our AR, paying out our bills. You want to collect as fast as possible, and you want to pay out as slow as possible within reason. Obviously, if there's, you got to pay the guys at some point, but we put in a couple week delay just to make sure if any issues came about, whatever it may be, we had some recourse, we had some leverage. If you pay your guys out and then something comes up and the customer doesn't, you know, approve the work, then you've already paid them out. Like, you've lost all your leverage to get them to go back. So having a few weeks delay was really helpful for us. But at the end of the day, like, this helped us. At the end of that year, we grew the business from $5 to $8 million in sales, and we increased the gross profit by 43%.
The number right there, that 43%.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. This is
hundreds of thousands of dollars of additional profit we were able to collect because we were organized. We put systems and processes in place. Like, we could hit our goals. We could grow the business. So it was at the end of that year, basically said, all right, guys, like, I've clearly, you know, gotten you back on track. And I'm excited to share, last year, for the first time ever, they hit $20 million in sales. So,
wow.
Again, huge impact. And so I was there 2018. 2019, though, is when recruited some of my developers and designers from my last company. They came on. They rebuilt everything. I did a much better job. What is now JobTread, set it up so that we could actually sell it to many construction companies. And we spent a few years building. 2021, we started selling it to the market. I think we got it to around 200 companies that year. 2022, we got to around 1,000 customers. Last year, our goal was 2,000. We ended around 2,200. You know, this year, our goal is 4,000. I think we just passed 2,800. So, well, on our way. But yeah, it's been a really awesome experience to be able to go from implementing this at one company to now helping thousands of companies implement systems and processes so that they can build much more scalable, much more profitable businesses.
Yeah, you guys are absolutely killing it. And I from your story in the beginning, when you mentioned, hey, I was checking out all these different softwares, I was downloading all these different tools, I wasn't even sure which one to recommend. For me, I'm a software nerd, so I'll go download 100 different softwares in a month, right? And I'll just free trial all of them to see what I like, what I don't like. And I usually know pretty quickly, but I was in the same boat that you were for one of my clients. And it was a demolition company out in Hermosa Beach, California. And man, I could not find a tool that offered all the different pieces and customization that they wanted. Yeah. And when you're looking at the progress billing by line item, when you're it gets pretty complicated with some of these estimates and how they're going about their invoicing. And then I found you guys. I was like, wow. And it just got better and better, to be honest with you, the further into the implementation that we got, because you just started to really see what the opportunity is and what you can all do and the impact it's going to have. My client actually called me, and man, he's been stressed for 2 to 3 years, right? Because they're growing. What was working before isn't working anymore. And he called me and he goes, man, this is going to solve majority of my company's problems.
Awesome.
And he sounded relaxed. And so it's really that significant. Now, when you're looking at people who are trying to implement technology in their company, whether it's at an approach standpoint or at a people standpoint, what advice do you have? Because a lot of people don't have a whole lot of experience, or they've failed in the past.
Yeah. And I get asked this a lot. It all starts with, you got to understand, like, what is the pain you're having? What is the problem that you're trying to solve? Before you start Googling, do some internal reflections. And that's why I went and I started shadowing the estimators. I shadowed the project managers. I shadowed the back office. Take the time to go and sit with your people. Or if it's just map out, like, your processes. Understand, like, where are the bottlenecks? What are the things that are, like, just you feel like you're spending the most amount of time on, but getting the least return on that time? You got to understand, like, what are the problems. And again, if you got a team, ask them, hey, what do you feel like you're doing that? If I could take that off your plate, you could be way more efficient. You could get so much more done every day, because they're going to tell you and they're going to know. And so having those conversations where they feel like they can open up about what their just inefficiencies are, and what their struggles are and their bottlenecks, like now you start to understand, hey, we need to focus on estimating. Like we're not able to get our estimates out the door fast enough, or we need to get a more accurate pricing, or we're struggling with scheduling or with invoicing, like whatever it may be. Understanding the problem is going to help you know once you've found the right solution. So once you understand that problem, then again, I encourage people, obviously, use the internet, go out there, Google, even ask your colleagues, your people in your network, other construction business owners, whoever it may be, consultants. There's a lot of people out there who can probably make some good recommendations for you. But once you've identified some potential solutions and some potential software providers, then what I would say is you got to take the time, do a demo with them, have them walk you through the system. Like you need to see it in action. Like it's super easy for companies to come up with a bunch of marketing, fluff and make things look pretty, and just, it might not be reality at all, but you want to see it in action. Spend the time to really learn what would this be like to implement it at our company. And so you can understand that. And I would encourage you to involve other people on the team who are going to ultimately be the users. Like the more that you can involve them in the process from the very beginning, you're going to get their buy-in. You're going to bring these stakeholders to the table. And now that they're part of the process, they're going to feel a lot more excited and take ownership over implementing that solution, versus if you go and you just pick something and you come and jam it down their throat. Like nobody wants to be told what to do. They'd rather be asked, hey, what if we use this? What do you think? Would this help? It's such a better process to be able to get that team buy-in. But ultimately, once you do find the right solution, I think it's important that you not only evaluate the product, but you're also evaluating the company. Like so many people undervalue the importance of having a great team behind the software. If they don't have support, if everything's outsourced overseas, and you can't get them on the phone and you can't get help when you need in your time zones, then like that makes it so much more challenging. And so you want to look for companies that are going to provide implementation and training services. They're going to provide a help desk. They're going to have lots of videos and online content that will help you learn how to use the product and how to get it up and running. And so again, I think it's so important that people tap into those support resources, because at the end of the day, like you could go figure this out on your own, or you could just get on the phone or get on Zoom or whatever with somebody who has experience. They can like literally just help you get this implemented so much faster. And a lot of times, hopefully they're not charging extra for support, but even if they are, like you may be able to tap into their experience implementing this with hundreds or thousands of other construction companies. And so they could actually help you save yourself having to learn the hard way, ways and things not to do versus what are the best practices. Again, I think those help you find the right software, find the right company and partner. But ultimately, once you do subscribe, like you need to devote time to learning the product and to getting it set up and getting it implemented. If you're going to have one foot in and one foot out, like you're going to struggle to get full adoption. You got to go all in and you got to block out time to learn and implement, because if you don't, you're wasting your time. You're wasting that company's time. Like you got to, make sure that you devote that time and energy to getting it set up. And like implementing any new software, it's going to take time to learn. You have to take that time and look at it as an investment, because ultimately that's what's going to help you be able to really reap the benefits of getting this new software in place. So again, I encourage it to be that team mentality as well, working together as a team to get this implemented so that you've got people excited about it along the way. And then ultimately, like when you need help reaching out to the companies, I think that's going to like really lead to much more successful selection and then procurement and implementation. And one other thing I want to throw out there, like it is my belief that like software should be affordable, and it should be affordable for all companies of all sizes. Look for something that is within your price range, something that is going to grow and help you become a more successful, more profitable business. Like I'm so tired of seeing other software companies out there. They're playing price games and price gouging. They create this super expensive price, and then if you go and you negotiate with them, like they'll drop the price by 50%. Again, that just lets you know that they're all trying to just tear your head off. Like software should not be expensive. It can be very affordable You know, and so I think it's very important that you look for companies that are transparent with their pricing. There's nothing that drives me nuts more than people coming in and nickeling and diming you, and you think you bought this and then you got to upgrade to all these other things.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. You know, you nailed it. You're preaching, right? So I started my career in software and software sales, right? So I know the whole game and all this kind of stuff. And so when I was looking for my client, I'm taking all these different demos and whatnot. For me, first off, I have to get my hands on it. So I have to actually get access to it at an affordable price, right? So if I can buy one user, if I can, whatever it might be, where I can get in and it's not too hard or too crazy expensive to get access to it, all right, I'm winning. I like that, right? The content, you guys have a ton of content, right? So when you're looking at helpful information, your YouTube videos, your help desk inside the system, absolutely fantastic. And then also when you're looking at affordability, right? When I'm taking these different demos, they're saying, hey, you need to sign up with us for a year. I want all 30 of the users right now, whatever it might be. Not with you guys, right? It's very simple to just get set up and make sure that you like it. If you want to upgrade or if you just want to sign up our way because you've heard great things, good. But it's just easy to actually give it a shot, right? And then it can go from there. But I'm telling you, man, the results of the clients I have worked with, they absolutely love the system, right? And it's changing the game. Now, when you're looking at just as a whole, what are some of like the features that kind of set you guys apart? Because when you're looking at awards, any kind of software awards that matter, you guys have won those, right? From the companies that actually matter. So what are some of the features that really stand out or things that people really like?
Yeah. And look, in full disclosure, I tell people all the time, we're not reinventing the wheel here. The fundamentals of managing a construction project and a construction business, they haven't really changed over the years. What we're doing is we're leveraging modern technology. We're building an easier to use, easier to learn application that's extremely fast. It's responsive. It works on any device, whether it's your computer, your tablets, your phones. And I think that what's important in this day and age is like, there's nothing worse than having software that is slow. If your people are having to sit there and wait, and maybe there's like a little spinny thing going on the screen, like that's total just inefficiency. That's wasted time. That time adds up day after day, week after week, year after year. And so like, you want to make sure that the software, it's fast, it works. If you find really buggy software, like again, just run for the hills. It's so important that things need to, red flag beyond belief. But I'd also say though, look, software is, it isn't going to ever be perfect. I don't even believe in perfection, but it's something that you're constantly working towards. And so when things do come up, you want to make sure that your partner is very responsive and will get those issues fixed as fast as possible. I think that, what was the question again?
Some of the features that set you guys apart. And before we even go, I want to say a couple real quick, if you don't mind, because you mentioned a few things with being slow. The user interface and just the experience, because we tried a different software prior to this one for one of the clients. It did not work. And then all of a sudden, I'm working with this guy, and he's just whipping around. All of a sudden, he feels at home, and he's trying different things. He's got new ideas. I'm like, and then the customization, right? You see a lot of limitations where companies are actually having to shift their processes to fit the software. I haven't hit one point yet with JobTread that I've had to do that, where I've been able to customize it, use formulas and all these different things to customize it the way I need to without having them to change the way they go about their day-to-day.
Yeah, I'd say we put a very concerted effort on designing JobTread to be extremely flexible and able to meet the needs of different types of businesses. I see all the time you've got these kind of these niche solutions where it's like just for home builders or just for remodelers or just for roofers or just for pool builders or deck builders. Like, again, the fundamentals of managing a construction business, they're really not that different. And so we put a lot of time and effort into making sure that you could get into JobTread and you can customize it to match your processes, to collect the information and the types of data that are important and relevant to you, versus a lot of times software, it's like you got to use it their way or the highway. And so I think that is something that a lot of people do notice about JobTread, is that it is very flexible and can be customized. Now, some people might also see that as, when you got a lot of customization, that means that it can take longer to get it implemented. Probably the biggest thing that
worth
we see is
every second, man, worth it. Absolutely. Yeah. It will pay off. You will.
Yeah, 100%. I think those are great points that you brought up. And I think too, though, at the end of the day, like the thing that I hear the most is it's JobTread's budget, the ability to build these job budgets out and how everything is based around that budget. All of your estimates and proposals that you sent out. And then when you got bid requests or work orders, purchase orders, your bills, your invoicing, like it all ties back to the budget. And that's what like is just, it's such a seamless experience where you're not re-entering the data over and over again. That's a very inefficient process that leads to potential issues. You know, this is just, it all flows together and then it's fully integrated with your QuickBooks Online, like a two-way sync. We do also integrate with QuickBooks Desktop. Don't get me started on that. I'm a big proponent of QuickBooks Online.
Don't get me started on that. Please don't.
So we'll put that one aside. But I think other than that, again, it's from JobTread's perspective, it's our responsiveness. We built this incredible community around our company. And so we view our customers as our partners. We're collaboratively working together, figuring out what is the right way to build this. Like, how can we improve this based on their feedback? We actually, on our help desk, we have a feature request board where any of our customers can come in and they can upvote other people's feature requests or they can submit their own. That helps us to prioritize the things that are most important to our customers and really to the market as a whole. And so that's how we prioritize our development is based on our customers' feedback. So again, I think that's such a huge value that you can't always see on the website or realize when you're buying into a company, like thinking about that ecosystem around it, that community is so valuable because with our JobTread Pros Facebook group, we've got thousands of people in there. And like a lot of the questions are obviously about JobTread and things they're trying to figure out how to do or ideas they've got. But there's also so much just like people helping each other. And like, you can throw out anything from, like, hey, how would you structure your contracts? Or how would you handle this situation with this employee? It's just so neat to see all of that kind of natural conversation where you've got people like genuinely wanting to help each other build better businesses. And it's so cool to see.
Yeah, it is cool. So when you're looking at new features, I wanted to ask you, roadmap, is there any kind of clarity that you can share with the vision or kind of the goals and aspirations for JobTread?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say when we look at new features, there's two decisions or two critical things that we look at. One, are our customers asking for it? Like, is this something that, you know, that our customers are asking for? It makes sense in JobTread. And once you've determined yes, then you go and say, okay, is this something that we should look at potentially integrating with someone else out there? Like, are there already solutions that this is all they do? Does it make sense to integrate? Or is this something that we should build our own and we should integrate it, you know, first class by making it a feature within JobTread. I'll give you an example. We got obviously like doing on-screen takeoff is very important to a lot of people. Not everybody, but some people want to be able to take a set of plans and draw and count the linear feet or the square feet or cubic feet or how many doors or what windows. Like, and when we heard so many times, like people were like, hey, what on-screen takeoff provider do you recommend or can you integrate? And when we started looking at, there's lots out there, but like thinking about how would that integration experience be? Like, how can we make this as seamless experience? It just made sense for us to say, you know what? We think we're just going to build it ourselves. We're going to make it first class, build it right there into that budget tool so you can easily pop open your set of plans, do your drawings, your measurements, and then come right back in and update your quantities or your formulas, parameters, things like that based on what the output was. And so that's something that's really exciting to us to be able to know that, and we're currently working on this right now, that you'll have that on-screen takeoff ability directly in JobTread. No. We have the ability to use what we call like formula takeoff, where you can still populate parameters and kind of input different metrics to come up with your unitized pricing. You can use production rates, labor rates, things like that. But there's lots of kind of scenarios like that, that again, there's not like this crystal ball on what you should build and how you should build it. It's about collaborating and really trying to understand the root needs and how can you best solve those problems working with your customers.
Yeah, 100%. I'll be in the system and all of a sudden I log in one day and I'll notice something's changed, right? They added this or they added this. And as a consumer, right, that's what you want to see. You want to see, like you said, you buy into the company, right? But you also buy into their vision and the roadmap and everything that they're going on. Because as your company grows and you're getting all these new features and functionalities, that's a great thing for you, right? So then you don't have to switch or you don't outgrow it, whatever it might be. Hey, you're a great storyteller, man. I really appreciate you coming on. If anybody wants to keep listening to you, you have your own podcast, right?
Yeah, we do. It's called Builder Stories. You can go to builderstories.com or you can find us on, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the major podcasts there. And it's pretty neat. I basically just interview construction business owners, leaders, you know, people who have got a story to tell. I love just being able to understand where did they start? How did they get into this? What was that kind of moment that like led them to want to start their own business? And what have been the challenges? What's worked well? What's not worked? And it's always just a very, really interesting conversation to let people unpack how they got to where they are and where they're going.
Yeah, it's cool, man. I listened to a couple episodes and they're great. So make sure you guys are checking that out. I have a couple more questions for you. But when you're looking at JobTread and you're looking at the future of the trades and the evolution of construction and the way that these businesses are running, do you have any predictions or thoughts on where the space might be going?
Yeah, I'd say luckily with construction, construction's not ever going to go away. It's we're going to continue to build year after year, no matter what it is. Like there will always be construction projects that are going to need to happen. And I think what needs to happen though is we're going to see a lot of those builders who they're still pen and paper, they're still using spreadsheets and those little bit more archaic means of selling and running their jobs, they're going to start to get beat out a lot by the companies who have leveraged technology. They've become more efficient. They've got, you know, more organization, better branding. I think there's a huge opportunity to really take your business to the next level by leveraging software, leveraging technology. Make sure that you're focused on building the best, most successful business you can. And at the end of the day, you can do that by focusing on the customer experience. You want to make sure that you're providing a very great experience from the very beginning. When someone lands on your website or calls you from that first time, like you always want to be focused on providing a great customer experience. And that will, I think in the long run, that's going to really play out and help you run your jobs the right way, do what's right, take care of your customers, and ultimately win those five-star reviews, win those references, get people to refer others to you know. It's so important this day and age when people can go online and they can learn everything about every project that went wrong. Mm-hmm. And hopefully some of the projects that went right, you got to ask for those reviews, try to get your customers to go out there and share the good word. You got to ask after every single project. Again,
I'm
tell
not going to do
like,
it. Otherwise,
pull out your phone, say, hey, would you mind if we recorded a quick video? I just tell me what was the pain that you were having? What were you looking for when you first started looking for a contractor? Why'd you choose us? How did the project go? And show us around the final product. Like, just, you got to ask for those testimonials, ask for those reviews, you know. But again, at the end of the day, like, if you always focus on building a great customer experience, that's going to help you build a great business and it's going to bring others to you. There are so many construction companies and contractors out there that it's so important that you stand out above the rest. And so that's where, again, I think leveraging software, technology, automations, AI, like this is going to be so important as we continue to move forward. And it's just, you can't get left behind. And so the people who are choosing to adopt and adapt these solutions, they're the ones that are going to continue to see their businesses growing, being successful. I can tell you, I see it all the time. There are people who join and they struggle. And then there are people who join, they adopt, they get it implemented, and they're having wild success. They're booking months out. And so it's a very clear, you got to focus on building and implementing the right systems and processes to create a successful, scalable, and profitable business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I got to ask you, you talked a little bit in the front end, in the beginning of the episode, about you selling your company. I know a lot of contractors out there, they have built a company that has maybe become almost a jail cell for them, right? And they're not even sure where they want to go or where the future is or what's the vision of the company. Do you think that contractors should, you know, start with the end in mind and having some kind of goal of exiting a company? Or what's your thoughts on that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I I'll share, like, I wasn't looking to sell my first company. I randomly had a banker come up and say, hey, man, can we just go and do a little market check, see what kind of valuation you might be at, see if anyone's interested? And I was like, yeah, sure. No harm, no foul. They waived all their fees. And sure enough, though, one thing leads to another. They come back with you and turns into a bidding war and got put in this position where, like, it made sense to go ahead and do the deal. I think, though, like, my belief is that, and again, I'm in a different sort of situation now. I've already had my big exit, like, you know, a job trade. Like, we're not looking to sell it. I think with people, the thing that I've learned is your career is it's also your life. Like, you have to figure out, what are you passionate about? What are you excited about every day? Like, I wake up excited to come in here and just conquer the world because this is what I'm passionate about doing. And if you don't feel like you're in that position, if you don't feel like you're excited to work every day and you're doing what you love, then you need to do some reflection and figure out, how do I get into that position? Or what can I change? How can I improve my life? Like, life is too short to not love every single day and to not be excited about it. Like, the people that you work with, you're going to spend more time with that team than your own family. And so it's so important that you build a great team, people that you want to spend your time with. And at the end of the day, like, there are two types of businesses you can build. You can build a business that you want to build it up and sell it, or you can build a business that's going to be a lifestyle business. It's something that you can build, you can live, you can enjoy. You make a lot of money. Maybe you hand it off to your kids, or you hand it off to one of the employees at some point. But in my opinion, I think you got to just focus on every single day building a great company that you enjoy and that you love, and the projects that you're working on are things that you're passionate about. You need to plan out and have an annual budget and annual goals. Maybe you're looking 3-5 years down the road, but, like, again, don't get too hung up on all the details. It's about every day focusing on doing the things that are most important to the business and just keep building it. And I think that is what, like, is it. The most successful entrepreneurs I see are the ones that are just, they're excited, they're passionate. I think, again, having the end in mind can be great, but it can also be something where that goalpost just keeps moving, and that becomes this frustration, this stressor. And so if it is your goal to build and sell, then great. What do you want to sell it for? Okay. And then what do you need, you know, revenue wise to get to that point? Like, understanding what they call them, comps, or, you know, multiples. You're likely going to sell it on a multiple of your revenue or multiple of your profitability. But you can back into, what do you need to get that valuation, to get that exit. And then, again, that can inform your goals. That's one strategy. Or the other strategy, again, just build a successful lifestyle business. Know that you work hard, you do great. You can have a nice balanced life of work and spending time with your family and just going on vacations and trips. Like, both businesses can be very rewarding and very exciting. And so I think it ultimately comes down to where each person's at financially, as well as within their career and in their own life, like their own happiness. If you're not happy, do something, change something, find a coach, join a mentor group, find a networking group, find something to, don't just keep doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. Like, you gotta, you gotta do something to change that, because being an entrepreneur, like, I gotta tell you, it is the greatest profession that you can have, is being your own boss. And when you can really feel that and understand that and make the right choices and build the right company, like, you're gonna really just, like, unlock all that potential for yourself, for your employees, for your customers. But you gotta just make sure you got the right mindset and you're focused on the right things.
I love that. So, Eric, I appreciate you coming. I got one last question for you, but make sure you guys are checking them out. So just droptread.com. You got to check it out. Honestly, like, I'm a software nerd, one of the best tools I've ever used. The construction space, probably the best, honestly. So I always try to end it with some words of wisdom that you want to leave the viewers, the contractors out there with. This whole episode has been words of wisdom. So let's see if you can give me one more golden nugget here to close this out.
Let's see. Words of wisdom. I would say building the right team is one of the most important things you can do. Making sure you've got the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus sometimes. Don't leave, you know, a bad apple in there to spoil the rest of the apple cart. Like, you got to make those tough changes. But building the right team is going to help you go so much farther. You don't have to go it alone, though. I think a lot of people feel like they may be solo owner operators, and they feel like they can't afford to hire people. They can't, whatever it is. Like, you don't need to go it alone. You can find a partner. You can find the right employees. You can find people who, again, start them off as 1099s, bring them on later full time. Build a great team. And I would say, like, also understand, what is your mission? What is your vision? What are you passionate about? And what are you trying to achieve with this business and with your time every single day? And once you really hone that in and understand that, because it's important. I think one of the best pieces of advice my dad gave me, and I struggle with a little bit, is that you can't boil the ocean. And as much as just because he says I can't do something, it makes me want to do it that much more. He's right. You got to really find one thing that you can do really well. Be great at something. Don't be mediocre at a bunch of things. Find your niche. Find the thing that you can be really great at. Build an awesome team around it and go do that. Do that. Focus on that. Put all of your energy into that. You got to be very focused and intentional with your time and with the business that you build. And I think that you can create a great company. You can add a ton of value, and you're going to have a very rewarding life as an entrepreneur.
Dial in. Dial in. Come on, everybody out there. Dial in the vision. Dial in the focus. Come on, let's get it. Eric, man, hey, I really appreciate you joining. It's been an absolute pleasure. And like I said, make sure you guys are checking out JobThread. Unbelievable tool, and it'll make a big difference. But thank you very much for joining us, Eric.
Yeah, I appreciate having me on, Nick.
As we wrap up today's inspiring conversation with Eric Fortenberry, it's clear that the future of construction management is here, thanks to innovators like him and platforms like JobThread. If you're interested in streamlining your construction projects, enhancing efficiency, or simply learning more about how technology can elevate your operations, we encourage you to explore what JobThread has to offer. For more information, a demo, or to sign up for JobThread, please visit jobthread.com. I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Eric Fortenberry for joining us and sharing his incredible journey from the world of investment banking to revolutionizing the construction industry through technology. Eric's story is a testament to the power of innovation, determination, and the impact of bringing tech-driven solutions to traditional fields. Through JobThread, Eric has not only streamlined project management and estimating processes for construction companies, but also paved the way for a more efficient, profitable, and technologically advanced industry. His insights today remind us of the importance of embracing change, the potential of technology to solve complex problems, and the value of applying entrepreneurial lessons to drive success in any sector. Before we sign off, a quick word about Better Boss, our own venture that is elevating the construction industry. At Better Boss, we're passionate about harnessing technology to streamline your business operations, from sales and estimating to project management and beyond. Our goal is to not just improve your job finances and customer experiences, but to transform your business into a model of efficiency and innovation. Discover how Better Boss can make a difference for you at betterboss.io. Join us next time as we continue to explore the innovations shaping our industry, helping you build smarter, faster, and with greater confidence. Thank you for tuning in and reminding you that in the world of construction, you're not just building structures, you're building the future. This is Construction Tech Talk signing off. Until next time.